Hey, it's me, Max Jaren. You're listening to Video Nom Noms. Thank you for listening. So I've been procrastinating a little bit. I've been listening to music when I should be recording a podcast. Last night I watched a couple of interesting movies. First of all, early this morning, I watched a Bruce Lee movie. Now, I looked up Bruce Lee, and he is the guy from, not Fatal Minos, Fatal Fist. What's the other one? Oh, Soul Brothers of Kung Fu. That is Bruce Lee. So I had seen a Bruce Lee movie before. The one I watched last night was on Amazon Prime Video, Return of the Dragon. Also featuring Angela Mao, directed by Jimmy Shaw. Featuring character called the Midnight Express, I think. Anyway, so I watched this movie. I'm always kind of a little surprised by like Amazon Prime's selection. I mean, I know they're catering it to me. I'm looking at like movies recommended for you, that kind of thing, but it always surprises me when they have obscure movies like this. Like Bruce Lee's Return of the Dragon. The other movie I watched was Darkman, directed by Sam Raimi, co-written by Sam Raimi, produced by Robert Taffer, starring Liam Neeson as the titular Darkman, and also starring Frances McDormand as his wife, I guess, girlfriend. I think they're married. So, Liam Neeson plays a kind of mad scientist character. I got some vibes of like Cronenberg and like The Fly, kind of like body horror stuff. This is a little bit of a body horror movie, but it never really dips into it too much, at least not that I saw. I did fall asleep, as I do almost every night while I'm watching that night's movie. And last night that movie was Darkman, and it was perfect. It was a big, fun, entertaining movie. Sam Raimi has a distinct style. I pretty much always like his movies. I don't think I've seen a Sam Raimi movie that I didn't like. I wasn't a big fan of the Spider-Man movies. I think they're overrated. What I might do in the future, I was even considering just doing a whole episode about the Spider-Man trilogy, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy, but I really don't like those movies enough to do that. Plus, to this day, I have not seen Spider-Man 3, which is the most notorious of the three. And I don't know if I ever will. I probably will at some point. I am a Sam Raimi completist, so I do want to see all of his movies. Anything Sam Raimi directs, I do want to see at some point in my life. And I will see the new Doctor Strange movie, even though it will be a Marvel movie. I'm sure it'll have some like Sam Raimi touches. I mean, this guy hasn't directed a movie in almost 10 years, and he always has Sam Raimi touches. Like, I was thinking about that weird scene in Spider-Man 2 with the claws, where they're killing everybody and the doctors. I don't know what you call that. The doctor's operating theater or something. I need a fucking tissue. Hold on a second.
Okay, I'm back. I took care of that. I'm feeling a little weird this morning, like more nasally than usual.
Feeling the need to clear my throat even more than usual, and I have kind of a weird, gross taste in my mouth. I believe this is all a result of me going back to drinking, quote unquote, regular dairy, also known as cow's milk. I was drinking oat milk for a while, but I finished my carton of it, and now I'm back to regular old cow's milk, which doesn't make me feel good. Kind of tastes gross to me, and it's something I want to move away from entirely. I'm not lactose intolerant, as far as I know. I've never had too much of a problem, although I've never enjoyed consuming too much dairy. I do kind of want to move away from it and just move toward eating more plants and being a vegetarian and possibly eventually vegan. So there's that. Okay, so back to Darkman. Sam Raimi, Spider-Man, So, I thought the Liam Neeson thing was kind of interesting because he's now like considered like an action star. I don't know, he was like a dramatic actor in the 90s with like Rob Roy or whatever the fuck that movie was, and Schindler's List. And then in the late 2000s with Taken, 2008 to be specific, he became an action star. And he's still kind of doing those sorts of movies like A Walk Amongst the Tombstones or whatever the fuck it was called. And he even has a new one. It's just like the new Liam Neeson action movie, basically. And they're all these kind of like standard, like, I don't know, international thriller kind of things. He's basically like trying to be Bond kind of thing. And this definitely isn't that. This is more of like a comic book thing. He even has like a comic book origin. He gets like dipped in acid. And there's this cool, there even is some like stop motion in it. I believe it was done with stop motion. And there's practical effects. Yeah, the effects are cool. It's kind of a cool movie, and it's kind of a cool concept. He gets all scarred up and fucked up. His face gets all fucked up, dipped in acid, so he has to wrap it in bandages, and then I guess he becomes the Dark Man. Oh, he has like special like abilities. I don't know. I was stoned. I'm kind of forgetting some of it, but yeah, it really felt like a comic book origin story, and it felt kind of like a comic book movie that wasn't actually based on a comic book. It was just like an original movie. But I like that. I would like to see more of that. Like more like comic book type characters, but just created for a movie setting, just like original IP. I actually can't think of another example of that right now. Of course, there are other examples, but I mean, I guess you could look at something like Super by James Gunn, which I'm not a James Gunn fan anymore. But I did kind of like that movie at one point. It's like basically, I mean, that's more like gritty and realistic. More like that kind of version of it, but it's just like this creation of like a hero kind of thing, but like done in like a cool way. And Darkman, he's like a dark hero. He's like the dark horse hero. So there's that. The story is credited to Sam Raimi, and then the script was co-written by Sam Raimi and his brother Ivan Raimi, and then like four other people or something, which is always a bad sign. You see more than 3 or 4 people, even more than like 2 or 3 people on a script. And I know it's like that's how it's credited, but still, it's a bad sign when you've had to have rewrites and a bunch of people working on the script. On IMDb, it's only, it says, oh, I guess it is 5 people. Okay, so on IMDb, it says Sam Raimi story slash screenplay. Chuck Farrer, screenplay. Ivan Raimi, screenplay. Daniel Golden, screenplay. Joshua Golden, screenplay. I assume they're brothers. I don't know who Chuck Farrer is. And then Ivan Raimi, I think, is also in the movie. One of his brothers is also in the movie. I didn't really know a lot of the other actors, though I did recognize some of them. Larry Drake looked familiar, kind of like a creepy guy from that time period. Oh, Ted Raimi. Yeah, Ted Raimi's an actor. Okay, Ivan Raimi, I don't think is an actor. Ted Raimi appears as Rick. He's like one of the bad guys that transforms him. It kind of had like a RoboCop vibe a little bit to me. It kind of reminded me of RoboCop. Like even like down to the story and stuff. Yeah, see, I'm looking at shots from IMDb. I didn't get to any of this cool stuff with like the helicopter. I ended up falling asleep. This is kind of a cool movie though. I do recommend it. It's from 1990, which I didn't realize, which is a very special year for me because it's the year I was born. I just want to see where it falls in Raimi's career because I thought it was earlier. I thought it was 80s. Okay, so he made this before Army of Darkness and after. Oh, so this is the movie he made between Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness. Okay, that makes sense. And he did direct Crime Wave. For some reason, why did I think the Coen brothers directed Crime Wave? I must be losing my damn mind. I have the Coen brothers' filmography memorized down to a science. Why did I think that? Okay, so they wrote Crime Wave with Sam Raimi. He directed it. I just want to look. The early part of Raimi's career is really the most interesting for me. My favorite Sam Raimi movie is The Evil Dead. Right, so that's first, 81. NC-17. And then Crime Wave is 85. Okay. So that's the one he made after Evil Dead, right. And then he went back to Evil Dead for Evil Dead 2, and then Darkman, and Army of Darkness. And then he kind of became like a studio filmmaker, kind of commercial. Quick and the Dead, A Simple Plan, For Love of the Game, which is the only kind of like non-genre. For Love of the Game is like a romantic drama from the late 90s about baseball. I don't know what you call that. I know they have dramedies, but what's a romantic drama? Or a dramatic romance? I don't know. And then The Gift, of course. We all know it's the movie where Katie Holmes shows her tits. And then basically for the rest of the 2000s, he was making Spider-Man movies until 2009 when he made Drag Me to Hell, which is maybe one of my favorite Raimis. I don't know. I liked it. I enjoyed it at the time. I don't know if I would say that now, but maybe. I think I did watch like part of it again recently. I think maybe I liked it even more than then. I don't know. I'm not sure. And he did write that with Ivan, I think. Yeah, he wrote it with Ivan. So that was kind of like a back to his roots sort of thing. And then since then, he's only directed two movies. One of them is not even out yet. So Oz, The Great and Powerful, which I have not seen. I'm very curious about this movie. Sam Raimi made a Wizard of Oz movie, and nobody gave a shit. Probably partly because James Franco is in it. You can't really take anything seriously that has James Franco in it, especially now. And then his new movie is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse, or Multiverse of Madness, May 6th, that's coming out. Patrick Stewart is in it. I didn't realize that. Charles Xavier, what the fuck? There's an X-Men crossover? We'll see about that. Just looking at the writers. I'm a little dubious. We'll see. We'll see how it turns out. It'll probably end up being just another Marvel movie. But I think it'll be better. I think it'll be like an elevated version of that. Peace. Hey, so the episode was finished. It was done. But I just gave a re-listen to, what's it called? Wincing the Night Away by The Shins. And I want to do like a little mini review of it. This album came out in 2007. I was 17. I was still in high school. And I liked the album when it came out. I kind of like, I don't know, would kind of listen to it more and more. It kind of grew on me. I kind of liked it more and more the more I listened to it. I would listen to it in college. And now listening to it again, it really is a great album. And it really is easily one of the best Shins albums. And it is their best album, actually, in some ways. Shoots Too Narrow is easily their best album. Like, just period, without question. It's Head and Shoulders above the rest. And then O Inverted World, I would put number two. And then Wincing the Night Away, I would put number three. It really is that trilogy of great Shins albums. And he really was, James Mercer really was a brilliant lyricist at that time. Really one of the best, I would say, along with Ezra Koenig. And although that would be a little later. Vampire Weekend's first album came out in 2008, and this was 2007, like I said. But, like, yeah, Conor Oberst, people like that. People, I don't know, there was, like, it was a different time, and there was definitely something in the air. There was a literariness, if that's even a word, to the lyrics, the way these guys were writing lyrics. And I do miss that,
That's definitely missing from music now. Music has moved definitely in a more instrumental direction, even though hip hop has kind of dominated everything, ironically. So a lot of stuff is still l lyrics based, or the lyrics are important, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's just a different, definitely a different time for indie rock, obviously. The indie rock bubble burst years ago. In fact, this album came out sort of at like the tail end of the indie rock boom. It was really like Vampire Weekend and then like Passion Pit. They were kind of like the next generation of indie rock, the first generation of internet bands, and then Animal Collective came out with what is it called? Oh, Merryweather Post Pavilion, and that was kind of the final album of the indie rock era in a way. And then kind of that was kind of the birth of like the next era, which was like 2010s music, which is more instrumental and less lyrics based. I guess. I don't know. Some people would say I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I think that makes sense. The song I wanted to mention specifically was, I don't remember. Oh yeah, Sea Legs. I forgot a lot of things about this album. It's been years, years and years since I listened to it. Especially since I listened to it from start to finish. But I listened to Sleeping Lessons again this morning, and they had played it on Time Crisis. That's what started this whole thing. And when I listened to it this morning, I was just like, this is just amazing. I love the Shins. I love this album. And it's kind of the Shins album that I haven't given the time to that it deserves. And I haven't given the appreciation to it that it deserves, which is part of the reason why I'm reviewing it right now on the pod. So there is a kind of a psychedelic jam section in. There's a psychedelic jam in Sea Legs that happens in Sea Legs, and it's crazy, and I didn't remember it at all, and it happens at the end of the song, and it's great. You should listen to that song, and you should listen to the album, even if just for that jam. It's crazy. I would say it's kind of their jammiest album, and it's also kind of their most Radiohead album. And I would say now, looking back on it, it's in some ways, they're most sonically interesting and experimental and adventurous, because it is kind of like their OK Computer in a way, because it combines, even though, I don't know, the Shins are hard. They're a hard band to nail down and pinpoint because every album is different. And this album is more like O Inverted World than it is like Shoots Too Narrow. Shoots Too Narrow is easily their most acoustic and songwriting based and kind of like singer-songwriter album that they've ever made. O Inverted World is more goes more into sonic experimentation, and so does this album. And it's just interesting to hear that experimentation, especially now, you know, years and years later. And it's also interesting to note that they didn't make another album after this for 5 years. Their next album, Port of Morrow, I think it's called. And then Heartworms is their newest album. Then they haven't come out with an album again for another 5 years, actually. So I don't know what's going on with the Shins. I don't even know if they're still together at this point. I would have to check. And Heartworms is the one Shins album that I have never heard. So now I really want to hear it. I don't know if I'll listen to it tonight, though. That might be. I think one Shins album in a day is enough. But I don't know. I'll see. So yeah, Port of Morrow, I thought was a pretty good album, but just wasn't the same level of quality for me as the initial Shins trilogy. And I'll let you know what I think of Heartworms. Just a side note, it is sort of interesting to look at the Pitchfork relationship with the Shins. They gave an 8.9 to Shoots Too Narrow, which is very high for Pitchfork in any era. Most albums don't get anywhere near 9.0, and that was almost a 9.0 for their second album. And then we get to what's it called? This one, Wincing the Night Away, and it might be like one of the biggest drops ever. It gets a 7.0. And I think that's really, I think they really underrated the album and really underappreciated it. And it might have even been, they like published an article where they reevaluated some albums, and Wincing the Night Away actually might have been one of the ones that they reevaluated. And it's possible that it had some sort of effect on the Shins career. I don't know if that's what happened, but it is curious to note that they didn't make another album for 5 years. I'm not saying it was just, obviously I'm not saying it was just Pitchfork. And I don't really know what other kind of reception they got. Anyway, Poor Tomorrow gets an 8.4, which I think is partly to make up for the Wincing the Night Away debacle. I mean, not really a debacle. 7.0 is respectable, but this album is at least an 8.0 album. It's not a 7.0 album. And then 7.6 for Heartworms, which is decent. Again, maybe underrating it. I think they overrated Poor Tomorrow a little bit. I don't think that's an 8.4 album. I would say more of 8.2 for that one. And then O Inverted World, I don't even remember what they gave it. I could look it up now, but I might get cut off in the recording. Okay. What was I looking up? Oh yeah. Pretty sure they reviewed it. I think they are still together. There's an article about them from this year. Oh, and they reviewed the Worm's Heart, which is kind of like a remix album of Heartworms, which came out the following year. So O Inverted World is an 8.0, which it deserves higher, but that's fair. I would say 6.6 for The Worm's Heart, but that's a remix album, so that doesn't really count as like an official Shins album. Thank you for listening. This has been my review of Wincing the Night Away by the Shins. I'm Maxwell Haddad, and this is Video Nasties. Peace.